folks that was a part of educating the Legislative Commission and Poverty about some of the initiatives like Circles of Support and some of the other anti-poverty initiatives the last couple of years. And
Good morning. I'm State Representative Maury Lanning from Moorhead and Clay County. I, along with Senator Jungbauer, was a co-author for the bill, the Ladder Out of Poverty bill, which we were very pleased to get passed this last session and signed into law. And the task force that the big task force that we have now with that passage of that law flows from the Commission to End Poverty by 2020, of which I was a member, as well as Senator Jungbauer. And what we're doing, what we did with the legislation, is to take basically three of the main recommendations of the task force, the commission to end poverty, and want this task force to advance those recommendations and figure out how can the legislature, what can the legislature do to move those recommendations forward. So that, in essence, is what we're about. We have three sub-work groups, community supports, which is this group. We have one on asset building, and we have one on financial literacy. Those are the three main themes or three main goals of the legislation. So we can learn more about that as we go along. But thank you very much for your commitment to be here, and we appreciate it greatly.
I'm Penny Clemens. I'm from Grand Rapids, and I'm a board member and an ally with Circles of Support, Itasca County.
I'm Alice Morin. I am the Circles of Support manager for Kutaska Community Action and the director of Circles of Support for Circles of Support, Itasca County. So I'm wearing two hats, but I do the same thing, really.
I'm Jenny Schulpe. I am interning with the OESW.
I'm Marie Melro. I'm from Moorhead. I'm volunteering with the OESW.
And I'm Amy Brennigan. I direct the OESW, and I'm the staff for this task force. So I'm the one that you get the plethora of emails from, because I believe in communication. And if you have questions, concerns, any logistics stuff, please make sure you let me know.
I'm Susie Schatz. I'm from Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota. And I apologize that I'm staying away because I don't feel I'm getting that sickness. So, and I'm going to be leaving a little bit after 11, so I apologize.
I'm Daniel Hicks from Senate Majority Research.
And I'm Mary Nino. Up until 2 weeks ago, I was the Health and Human Services Researcher for Senate Majority Research, and Daniel is my replacement. So I'm now the Executive Director of Child Care Works, and we are a statewide advocacy organization that works on quality, affordable, and accessible child care for parents and communities.
And I'm Mary Ackerman. I'm Director of External Relations for Search Institute, and that's the group that does the developmental asset work and trains across the country and the world now.
Well, why don't we start? We've got three pieces of paper in front of us, and one of them is the work group number three, which just describes what community supports is and what that of the three work groups that Representative Lanning described. This is the one that we have decided to work on, this group here. And just to look at the goal statement, it was a recommendation of the commission to support families and supporting each other. And it talks about, well, there's a place for institutional involvement. It's really focus of this group is to look at social engagement and building social capital among members of a community to help people make their way out of poverty. And the proposed tasks that the overall legislative task force talked about was first to look at cataloging what's already out there, what's working, what are some programs, initiatives that are already working in Minnesota and other places, and basically find out to help people help each other, essentially. And two that were mentioned specifically in the report from the Legislative Commission were Circles of Support and the Search Institute. And I brought copies, actually, of the couple of pages in the final report to the legislature that described this. Let's see that. Describe this activity, and it's under letter B. It talks about revitalizing communities by nurturing person-to-person support, and it describes their some of the areas that the Legislative Commission, when it did its trips around the state and it did some research, the commission had a full-time staff person, Greg Gray, along with Amy Brennigan and some other folks that were doing some research. It lists there some of the bullet points about what are some ways to help communities build that person-to-person support. Maybe we can, you can take time to read that at some point, but on the third page, or the inset here, it talks about circles of support. And on the back page, it talks about Search Institute. So since those two groups are here, does it make sense to maybe talk a little bit about those two groups?
Yes.
And then maybe go from there? And since we have some circles experts here, do you feel comfortable in just giving kind of an overview, Alice? And here's Greg. All right. Welcome. Greg, just mentioned your name, actually.
Uh-oh.
As one of the fabulous researchers and executive director of the Legislative Commission.
In other words, you lied.
So, Greg Gray, here to join us. We just went around and introduced ourselves, and we're just starting to talk about some of the initiatives, Circles of Support, and the Search Institute. And Alice from Kutaska is going to give a little overview of the Circles.
Sure. Circles of Support is a social capital building network that helps primarily the working poor. That's where we focus our model on, build relationships in the community and work on goals in the specific areas of increasing income, reducing debt, increasing academics or skill base, and personal empowerment. So we are intentional about focusing on the resources of the private sector versus institutions to help people make their way in life without being service dependent. So it's a, in part, a mindset shift for the community to look at people in poverty differently, to really be educated about what poverty is today versus a couple decades ago when work solved poverty, and today it doesn't necessarily do that. And it's also a mindset shift for the people who are trying to improve their lives, that there could be other ways of doing things versus looking for a service to solve the problem, and really helping them develop their personal self and their own confidence to move in the direction of the life they really want to be living.
From
so that's a, yeah, it's kind of a difficult thing to have that short elevator speech.
Yeah.
So we're looking for volunteers to match into these circles with people who want to proceed in this direction. So the way that we focus it in Grand Rapids, it's not a crisis-oriented service. People are really committing to a process voluntarily over time, and we create this structure where they can come into and really are responsible for creating their own opportunities through the relationships that they build. And at some point today, maybe we will hear a few words from Penny, who is in direct relationship with people and has been at this for a few years.
Actually, if you want to jump in, Penny, just mention what it's
I think one of the big differences with Circles, it's not a short 6 month, 6 week program. It covers 3 years, and it, as an ally, it's amazing how much this changes people's lives. And it's actually just one person to another person, making a connection. And in our case, it's those of us from middle class making a connection with the working poor. And through that social capital, you can see amazing things happen. They gain confidence in themselves, which really is one of the key. A lot of these people have been, the poor have been beat down time after time after time. They're not worthy. They're lazy, but that's what they feel that society thinks about them. But when you can work with a person one-on-one and they understand that they're valuable, important, and they deserve the same thing that everybody else deserves, we can physically see a change. from the first time they come to a meeting and they hold their head down and they don't really want to speak until they have been through this. Sometimes it's only a month, sometimes it's 2 months. And they sit up straighter. They have a good outlook on life. And somebody cares about them and thinks they're important. And we're not really a handout. We're a hand up. So it's a great program. And as an ally, I get much more out of it than I give.
So you hear a lot from allies. And too, they talk about just understanding the barriers that folks have that you don't know when you're in a position of maybe not having to deal with social services. You don't know what the barriers are for someone who's trying to make their way through. So that's another benefit of the Circles program, is just opening up the eyes of folks who might not know. I have a white paper that the group, that the Circles of Support Network put together for the Legislative Commission a couple of years ago, 2008, I guess it was, just to educate members of the commission about the elements of the program. And we don't need to go through it now. That can be something that you can read on your own. But it does highlight the main elements of the initiative. There's a weekly support group that happens. There's actually quite a structure to it. The folks that become allies get training, ongoing support from at the Community Action Agency to begin with, but it doesn't need to remain in the Community Action Agency. It could be spun out into the community. In fact, that's happened already down in Marshall and Windham, Minnesota. Faith communities, churches have taken these initiatives on. So maybe just as a brief overview of Circles, and then we can move on, Mary.
Can we just make a follow-up? Sure. And Greg can attest to this, but as the commission traveled around the state, I think commission members were very much impressed with Circles of Support program and what it has meant to people who are trying to work their way out of poverty. And the challenge for this work group is, what can we do as a state to help further support these program initiatives for Circles of Support? What is needed to help other communities be able to do what you've successfully done in Grand Rapids and other places around the state? That's what we need to hear from this group. What can we do to help promote and advance this what's proven to be, I think, a very successful program?
Oh, and Greg, since you came, to introduce yourself.
Gregory Gray, working with Community Action of Minneapolis. I would just reiterate what's already been said, I think, about Circles of Support. Certainly the commission was extremely impressed with that, and I think we attended at least three, maybe more, different circle sessions in different parts of the state, and they were impressed with the fact that these are local in nature. They are volunteer. It provides an ongoing base of support within those particular communities. And I think one of the things that was missing maybe was something like this white paper where, you know, provides a general template and overview of what Circles does. I know the other piece was some constant funding. And a lot of that, again, is going to probably have to be local in nature, but to the extent that there was at least some seed money to help these things get started, to maybe have someone who could coordinate and work with the various local circles to help them get going and keep going. I think those are all things that probably should be on the table.
I just want to add, too, I think one of the really unique features of Circles and of Search, too, is in that something for all of us to think about is this sort of unique aspect of it's a kind of a model of with and not kind of coming in on top of and for. I think that's kind of what makes, that's sort of what we're trying to get at and as we think about what these programs and this sort of approach to that, it's kind of much, I feel like I've used the word organic 5 million times in connection with this work group, but it is. I mean, it's definitely...
It's powder culture.
Yeah, it's definitely not coming in on top of and prescribing what works. It's understanding first and then together finding some solutions. That's what I understood from my experience in observing it, too. So,
Yeah,
Well, and both of the programs are all about community engagement, and community engagement is really the key, I think, in addressing these issues.
Okay, well, there's several kind of parts of SEARCH, but one of them kind of riffs off the Circle's approach, which is healthy communities, healthy youth. And that's a volunteer-based, again, kind of initiative when a community gets mobilized to begin to think about how they can work together. We're known for a survey that we do in, typically you do this in schools, and it's usually a sampling of middle school and high schools, although we do have elementary schools involved as well. And we do an aggregate sampling of the strengths and supports that young people have. And that's our shorthand for it is developmental assets, or the asset approach. And when a community receives this aggregate report back, it measures 40 different levels of support and attributes that young people have that come out of developmental psychology, out of education, out of the health systems, so that you can actually look at a community and say, my community has 19 of these assets. And what that means is the young people perceive that many of the 40 assets in their lives. Now, the interesting thing about SEARCH's work is that we do this all across the country, and we do it in rural areas and in urban areas, and we do it in Harlem, and we do it in Wayzata. And what we find is that the average number of assets that young people have across the country is around 19 or 20. That's out of 40 that are the research base for what makes a strong, resilient young person, or adult, for that matter. So what that does is it begins to say to a community, well, wait a minute. We thought we were doing a pretty good job with our kids. And then people start saying, well, who needs to be at the table? And because it's kind of a neutral report, it isn't about a school, it isn't about a neighborhood, it isn't about a faith community, it isn't about the family, it's about all of them, it brings people together in a mobilization process that's a lot more energizing, because everybody can find a place where they matter. Childcare people can go, oh, we can pick up this corner. And after-school programs say, well, gosh, we should be expanding. And it brings everyone to the table to do what they do best. And what we find is communities say it stops turf wars. And right now in the recession, we are finding it more and more difficult for sustained mobilization efforts, because standalone agencies and programs are all looking for funding. And they perceive that they have to compete to get that funding. So one of the nice parts about a mobilization or initiative process like Healthy Communities is that people begin to see, oh, I don't have to compete. You're going after a different dollar than I am, or a different volunteer than I am. We can all have our own place and piece of the puzzle. So it's, and again, just harking back to Circles, young people don't get assets by sitting in front of a computer or a television. They get assets by one-to-one relationships. So the way that this works is that community members hear this and say, oh, I individually can do something. It's not just about an organization that's doing good work, but I can pay more attention to the young people at the mall, and I can pay more attention to my neighbors than I have been. I can remember their names better, and maybe a birthday or a Halloween costume, or I can just be more present for the young people in my community. And once you start doing that, you actually become more aware of adults in your community. I mean, it's just this interesting disengaged culture that we have, which we're trying at SEARCH Institute to get the research behind it to show people that it's just common actions. It's not rocket science, and it's not complex programs. It's intentional, and it's caring. There are a couple of other things that I also want to mention, though, that are not necessarily things that we've talked about too much. We also have a whole other bunch of work you can tell I'm not a researcher, a whole bunch of work around parenting and families called Parent Further. And that work really grew in the last 2 years because of the emphasis around young parenting skills, that we didn't have the support network that we used to have. And young parents maybe were not connected to a faith community or the aunts and uncles and the extended family. And they were really struggling with appropriate, what we might have said 20 or 30 years ago, common sense parenting ideas. So now Search Institute has a huge growing library of resources on a website called Parent Further. We have trainers, we have, and it's not the researchy stuff. It's very basic activities. So it's, you know, if you want a caring child, when your neighbor breaks his arm, bake cookies with your child and the two of you carry the cookies next door. That does more for making a caring child than sitting down and talking about carrying. So they're just very kind of easy activities. Make, again, parents think about things. I also want to bring up the Minnesota Alliance with Youth. I chair their board, and I do that in part because they're another mobilization, statewide mobilization agency. The Minnesota Alliance with Youth is the organization statewide that has Promise Fellows or America's Promise Volunteers, and they're actually, they get paid a stipend, but I would call them a volunteer. It's a tiny little stipend for a year's worth of work. And we're working now to actually expand that team of Promise Fellows, hopefully to 200, which is a huge jump for us because we've had 60, and then last year we were able to have 80. And these volunteers are an interface between school and community. And they focus on not necessarily the toughest young people, but young people on the edge who, for whatever reason, are just not making it. And so their goal is to have a team of those young people and work with them one-on-one and to connect the community back into the school. And it's another approach that when we were talking about some of these approaches a year or two ago, I wouldn't have brought up, but I'm bringing it up now because with the expansion, the goal is really around communities that would never have this kind of volunteer intentional expertise. And so it's a huge resource that Minnesota Alliance with Youth is hoping can go into maybe smaller communities that don't have such intentional, like Grand Rapids, where there are things cooking all the time. You just look to them for innovation. But there are a lot of small communities that just don't have that kind of cohesive thinking yet and vision yet and maybe confidence yet that they can pull some of this off. So with 200 Promise Fellows, hopefully if everything works and we get our grant written and we get the funding from the feds and all of that, we'll have a huge team of people that I think can directly impact this work.
I was just wondering, Search Institute has expanded on an ongoing basis from one community to another. Is there really any need for additional assistance at the state level? And if so, what need would there be?
You know, that's a great question because the expansion is mostly because someone hears about us. It's not because we're out expanding. And we don't have funding to do that. At one point, Lutheran Brotherhood was our big partner a decade ago that helped us really expand Healthy Communities, Healthy Youth by using their volunteer network to expand this work into communities all across the country. We no longer have that kind of funding, so we don't have mobilization funding at Search right now. That kind of funding would be fabulous because not right now, it's someone who says, oh, I think I heard about this. Tell me a little more. And one of our staff people has to squeak out a little time and try to get them to the website and maybe send them a pamphlet or two or connect them with another organization that's doing our work close by. And but there are a number of really good initiatives out there that are models. I mean, Morehead is one. And
close by St. Louis Park is probably one of the most well-known models as well. But again, you've seen one, you've seen only one. They don't look alike because they're all dealing with their perceived perception of priority, and their community doesn't look like another community. So the models are, they're not cookie cutter. So it's a little challenging for communities to get mobilized and get this work done and sustain it. Because again, it's not, you don't open up a notebook and turn to page 17 to find the template for that. It really relies on innovative, caring people doing the work.
That's
a good question, though, Greg.
Several times over recent years, I've introduced legislation that would provide some funding, not a lot, like $250,000 a year for 2 years, to the Search Institute to be about the business of helping communities around the state set up one of these healthy community initiatives and engaging the community and trying to do a better job of caring for their young people. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to advance that, and I'm hoping that this initiative now can help get some more impetus as a result of the work of this group. But Mary, maybe you could give folks a sense of, like, how many communities out there in Minnesota right now are there, okay, out of the 800 some cities that we have?
Well, we think, and again, we think because we're not out creating them, they bubble up, which is some of the magic of this work, is that it actually comes out of the community saying, we think this is a great approach. And one of the reasons that it's interesting is that the approach uses young people as leaders as much as it does adults. We think that there are about 60 communities across Minnesota, but again, we don't have staffing to the level of being able to stay in touch with all of them that we used to have. We've had a little bit of funding from the Otto Bremer Foundation to create a newsletter that goes out from Search to all the communities that we know about that might want to learn about us, that might want to hear stories and activities that they might want to replicate. So that's an actual resource that we do send out to communities. And there are many more than 60 communities that are part of that membership list, and anyone can be a member. It's a free newsletter. So we know that there are activities going on, but perhaps not something that would be as organized as a full-fledged initiative. Sometimes the initiatives actually are in a single organization. It might be a scouting troop. It might be a school. It might be a church. It might be an anything where someone has heard about our work and just takes it and uses it and uses it and uses it. And it's interesting to hear how when people start using it, they begin to bring young people into the problem solving. And when I think about poverty right now, one of the things that I think is crucial is that we begin working with younger people who are in this situation because they see solutions where we don't. They see opportunities. It doesn't look as big and hard to young people sometimes. I was in Northfield, and one of the young people said, you know, we need financial literacy for our parents. And he was a young man who was from an immigrant community. Search Institute has a financial literacy program now that is only about 6 months old, I think, Greg. And it's called Bank It, and you can jump on the website again. And it's free resources. It's fabulous. And so young people are the ones who often say, you know, I have an idea. Why don't we try this? So the initiatives that are intergenerational in our work are really, they're more sustainable, they have more energy. As an adult, they're a little harder to work with because we're not used to not running on an agenda, and young people are not great agenda people. But again, it makes the work
just that much better. There's another bit of research that I do want to bring up because I think it's relevant to at-risk kids, and that's the work that we've done around thriving. And we've got yet another website called Spark, and it's about adults, mentors, teachers, parents, neighbors, actually being intentional about asking what it is a young person cares about and is good at, and what is their passion or their spark, and who in your life knows about that passion and spark, and how much can you exercise that spark? So it's kind of a three question: what's the spark, who knows about it, and do you have opportunities to actually show off your spark, practice your spark? What we've done right now is we've done a lot of pilots. We're in West St. Paul and in Northfield, and we've done a lot of piloting. The audience that seems to resonate most quickly and most deeply is kids at risk. So, again, I think it could be an interesting way to introduce adults into young people's lives, because this young person wants and likes the trombone. Well, we can find community members who play the trombone. And it doesn't have to be a formal mentoring program where, as an adult, I'm going, oh, I don't know if I have the 2 hours a week and blah, blah, blah. But when someone says, we've got some kids who'd like to just do a garage band, and we know you play, and I know you know, can you just start kind of paying a little attention and maybe meeting with them every once in a while? And I mean, it gets to be goofy things like fixing motorcycles, and I mean, just, it's not all soccer and lacrosse. So it's a nice way for communities to respond to a young person's passion rather than their problem. And I just think there's some relevancy here as well for this work. So.
Could you say something more about the Alliance for Youth and what? You know, what are some of the goals of what you're trying to accomplish, and what can state policy or state initiative do to help that?
The Minnesota Alliance with Youth actually grew out of America's Promise, and you probably all know the Five Promises and America's Promise work. It's had an interesting evolution. Okay. I'll bring that. That's a good.
Oh, okay.
I'll get more of that because it's relevant to this group. It's about self-sufficiency. It's about health. It's very basic that there are five promises that every child should have.
Am I the only one who didn't know?
Well,
that?
And
yeah, you are. Anyone remember?
And and Search was working with them when they tried to create their five promises. They're not our 40. Assets. They tried to get it down to five, and they're very basic, and they were built and created, the five, to relate better to corporate funding and private funding, ways that business can respond to building healthy communities. You might hear about them with the 100 best communities. You might see something about St. Louis Park being one of the 100 best communities in the country, that kind of thing. They're a Washington-based group. But they were doing a lot of statewide work at one point. They've kind of backed out of that. But Minnesota, partly because of the Healthy Communities work, really kind of hung in there as wanting to keep this America's Promise, Five Promises alive. Their logo is a little red wagon, if that might ring a bell.
Colin Powell was involved.
Colin Powell, yep.
Years ago.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was a big summit, a big national summit on that. So Minnesota, I love the fact that we're just good volunteers, but Minnesota really hung in there with this statewide model of bringing communities together to care for these five promises. And so it was a volunteer organization for a while, and then it was kind of shared leadership structure. And over the last 3 years, their executive, Sarah Dixon, has taken a board through a really good process of saying, no, we need to have a real strategic plan. We need to have a board that's on board and working hard. We need to fundraise. We need to get our visibility up and around because it's actually working. And so We apply to the feds for dollars for Promise Fellows. They're like a VISTA volunteer, if that's another bit of language you might know. We had 60, now we've got 80, and the board is in the process of trying to move this up, ratchet it up to 200, which is where we are right now. And Maury, I think any help that our state leaders can do to help Amy Klobuchar, whoever is going to be working on this on the Hill, would be fabulous, because again, we see this as a real direct service model that can connect schools to community, which is one of the hardest things to do. Schools, because of just the tough job they've got, are just so focused like this that it's very hard for them to find any innovation, any time, any energy to, now you want me to connect to that community? And so to have someone that's there on staff working, knowing the teachers, knowing the young people, working to bring parents better into the school, working to go out and talk to parents or talk to the banker or talk to the Super Value folks about the pizza for the track meet, whatever it is, that one person can make a whole lot of difference. So the program does a lot of training for those 60 or 80, now maybe 200. So we train them in all kinds of strategies. We train them in where to find circles and what it is. We train them in the assets. We train them in resiliency and leadership development. And so it's a statewide mobilization program.
And you spend like a year in a community?
They spend a year in a community, yeah. Okay. We've never been able to have two fellows in a community until this past year, and with expanding to 200, we think we can actually put some teams in some part to work with communities and apply a little bit better intentionality with training and working with them. So again, we might even want Sarah to come in and help us think at some point.
Yeah.
She'd
yeah.
be delighted to do that.
Good.
It sounds similar to some of the volunteer programs like the Lutheran Volunteer Corps. I was
yes.
a volunteer corps person in D.C. Yeah. back in 87. And just spending a year in a community, getting to know it.
Yeah.
And like you say, you're essentially a volunteer,
right.
but you're kind of a glue person. You're the person that tries to connect people
the glue.
To each other.
It's the glue.
Kind of an initiative. So.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you for those. And so part of what this group will be doing is collecting an inventory of groups like this. And I've just added Search Institute, Lions for Youth. Obviously, we have Circles of Support on there. And I want to give an opportunity to talk for work to Lutheran Social Services. If you have initiatives that you want to talk about, it's okay if you don't. But if you want to talk about anything, would you like to start buzzing?
I know.
Do you have your cell phone number?
Does that make a difference?
I think we all turned our cell phones off earlier.
The cell phones trigger the buzz.
So just the opportunity to talk about any other initiatives that you're aware of. I know there's a lot of faith-based initiatives going on, and being the name of the organization that led to the legislative commission, that is a group too. I just wanted to give you the
trying to figure out what is. No, I'm happy to talk. Yeah, right. So I'm still trying to figure it out myself. One thing that I am excited about that I think connects into this is Child Care Works has mainly worked with child care providers, and so centers, family homes, and then family, friend, and neighbor networks, which I think would be a good fit here. But we've recently gone through some strategic planning and are actually going to be expanding our focus to parent engagement and helping parents understand the importance of quality child care for their children, especially in getting ready for school. And there's a real strong interest in the funding community as well that we're that we're trying to reduce that achievement gap. And so we are going to be kind of ramping up those efforts in terms of engaging parents as consumers of childcare in what they're buying. And so I don't know what that's going to look like just yet, but I'm excited to start working through that. And obviously all of this fits together. So
and obviously state funding is always an issue.
Yeah.
Things like that. So.
Yes, it is. But one of the ladies earlier made a comment that I, when you were talking about the circles of support that I really liked, and let me see if I can find it. Focusing on the private sector rather than, you know, institutional or service dependency. And we know with childcare, you know, 70% of childcare is being purchased with private dollars. So we need to pay attention to that and look at that as a very different model than other social service programs. And we're talking about childcare assistance. So those are just some of the things that we're playing around with right now.
It's more, like you said, the focus on engaging parents and really knowing what's out there.
Right, right. And, you know, talking about it as a work support as well.
No, we're not talking just about kids, right? This can be
no.
any kind of...
No.
Okay.
No. That's just mine.
Well, a lot of them focus on kids, so I thought maybe I'm not understanding. But one area I think where it really reminds me of the circles of support is our CORE program that we do for veterans, which is a statewide program, and includes case management, outreach, I think rehabilitation, education, and... what we do is really when a veteran will come into one of our programs, kind of surround them with all the services that they could possibly need to kind of get back on their feet again, because so many veterans are coming home with brain injuries and with in really difficult financial situations. So we provide financial counseling and case management, get them into mental health counseling and their family, and it's at no cost to them. So any veteran of any war can use this service. And we've got a lot of reports of people who it's really, you know, prevented suicide and kept families together so that they can work through unemployment. And so we've also got employment counseling that they can access as well. So kind of that surround the person and bring them up and connect them to institutions in their communities that can support them as well and can assist with that. And then also I would just say... on the level of the seniors that we work with. We're also reaching out to organizations like UCARE and getting support in that way rather than all of it being simply funded through the federal government, like the Senior Corps, Senior Nutrition Services. And then financial counseling in general, we get a lot of referrals from the community, from businesses, and do a lot of partnerships with businesses as far as providing the services. So I don't know if that kind of speaks to what we're looking for here, but just some examples on the fly. I'm sure I could come up with some more.
Oh, that's great. I know we use Lutheran Social Services, Daryl Dahlheimer, one of your financial counselors, to do train the trainer with our cornerstones that a lot of the CAP agencies use.
Yes, and one of his passions is teaching in schools about financial literacy. So looking more at extending that into more schools.
So I'm trying to think next steps here. Should we look at research or...
maybe I can just add one more program that has proven to be successful. And it's...
awesome.
The program is called Northern Connections.
Thank you.
And it's modeled after a successful program that was implemented in North Carolina a number of years ago. And currently we have 11 or 12 counties in western Minnesota that have this program available to them. And what the program is all about is basically a career counseling service where people who are trying to advance themselves through further education or moving into a job that pays better, that helps them improve their lives. And it can be done over the phone. Individuals can contact the Northern Connections, work with a counselor over the phone. That person can help them work through one-on-one. It's like the circles of support, but it's targeted particularly at trying to help people move out of their situation of poverty into a better life. And it's a program, frankly, that ought to be statewide. And currently we only have it in about 12 counties in western Minnesota. But there's another contact person that we could have come to a meeting and talk about success of this program. It's been very successful, and community action agencies have been very much involved in getting that started too. And we got them state funding two different times to get that program up and running. So that's another example.
Mm-hmm. I know Amy and I went and visited. I can't recall, you said now there's some state funding. What is the main ongoing operating support for that?
Well, they've had foundation support. The initiative funds have, and they've had some other foundation grants along the way. So it hasn't been only state funding, but we've got a bill I carried that I think we, again, got to about $250,000 a year for 2 years, two different times. So they've had like $1 million of state funding here in recent years to work on this.
Would you see that being something that would typically be funded at the county level? Or do you see that in your mind as something that...
I think it's more of a regional sort of service, and that's where the initiative funds can really play a role. And that's another thing that I'd like to mention. I talked with, I've been very much connected and involved with the initiative funds from the very beginning, and I talked to one of the initiative fund directors, West Central, Nancy Straw, and about getting them more engaged in this process. The initiative funds, I think, can play a role in advancing circles, advancing the work of the Healthy Community Search Institute, a lot of these things. They've got resources that can be leveraged here to help all of these programs. So we've invited them to participate in all three of these work groups, and they were not able to be here today, but... you know, you need to, when you're trying to do these things, you need to use all of the sources of potential support you can find out there. And I don't know if maybe some of you don't know about the initiative funds. The initiative funds were set up back in the 80s, started in 1986 by the McKnight Foundation. And they're basically community foundations that are anywhere from... 7, 8, 9 counties, 6 regions around the state, and they have all been very, very successful. They've built endowments. They have continued to fund various programs like the ones we're talking about here, and serving as a kind of a community, a regional community foundation. And They're a great resource in terms of our being able to advance any and all of these ideas.
Along those lines, too, I know from the Blandin Foundation, which provides a lot of support for the Circles Initiative up in the Casca area, Becky LaPlante, who serves on your board, I believe, she is interested in joining this group as well, and is a Circles of Support ally, and... thinking about some of the private dollars that are out there, I think just remembering, you know, we need to keep tapping into them, but just keep remembering that the money, it doesn't stay there forever, unfortunately,
right.
So we have to keep being creative and keep thinking, and that's why we're I want to let Xavier Bell introduce himself. Thank you for coming all the way down from Duluth. And
glad I'm here.
Good to have you.
Beautiful drive. Long Xavier Bell from Community Action Duluth, and ran a Circles of Support program in Duluth. I'm glad I'm here.
Yeah, it's great to have you.
So
we actually spent a little time. We've gone around the table and talked about some of the various community supports initiatives. And Allison Penny talked about Circles and gave kind of an overview. And we distributed the white paper.
Very good. Yeah, our Circles, they're rural. We're more urban, and our programming is a little bit different, but the outcome's the same. And just bringing community involved into the into relationship and an understanding of what the real issues are that are impacting families in our community. I could go into detail, but I probably heard a good overview, and so just, I'm here to listen and hopefully provide some insight to you.
Something I didn't mention was just kind of the history of Circles too. Back in 2002. The motto was brought up from Iowa, actually, Ames, Iowa, of an initiative called Beyond Welfare. And the motto was brought to the Minnesota Community Action Partnership, where I work, and shared with the 28 CAP agencies that meet annually for a conference. At that time, four CAP agencies started the Circles Initiative, and Duluth was one of them, Kutaska was another, Western Community Action down in Marshall, and Heartland Community Action in Wilmer. And then a couple of years after that, 2004, 2005, Lakes and Pines Community Action in Mora started the initiative, and Arrowhead Economic Opportunity Agency up in
Virginia,
thank you, started the initiative. And at this point, there's three actually at this point. It's just been tricky with funding. That's really been the issue. It's been a very successful initiative, but and that's why we're excited to keep talking about. But Duluth Community Action, Kutaska Community Action. Little Falls has started an initiative. TCC in the Little Falls area has just started their initiative. And Lakes and Prairies up in Moorhead is trying to get theirs going again with help from Representative Lanning. We do have a representative that was hoping to come up today from the Marshall area, actually Wyndham. They lost their funding, but the community kind of took the Circles of Support initiative on, so they're still going. So there's kind of efforts going on around the state, and as X said, they look a little bit different in each community. So
I think that's the beautiful thing about the process, mm-hmm. is that it can be molded and shaped to what the priorities are for that community, mm-hmm. but the focal point is that level of community engagement and allowing community members really to have a stake in what the outcomes are of their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So, Amy, the two sheets that you handed out, the
studies
and evaluation and the inventory, those are kind of our job as this group to start out with, right?
I think we're doing a good job on kind of identifying some of the programs around. And that is the, because we don't have colored paper, that's the triangle.
Oh, I love it.
Is the programs, and then the one with the circle on it is for any studies, reports, etc. So what we're basically trying to do, so I think, you know, for this last hour, what I would just suggest is, you know, thinking about these two pieces and maybe brainstorming a little bit, filling them out, but I think the other conversation we should start to have is just about, what can we do as a task force? What can the larger task force do to sort of bring forward these successful initiatives, programs? And we know funding is always something that we need, but, you know, what are some other things that the task force could do to advance the idea of community supports and community engagement? I was just looking over the enabling legislation, you know, just trying to, I'm always trying to like laser point
what our job is in the end, so we can keep moving towards that. And I think one of the main components of the final report for the task force is there's a point specifically that says identify incentives and mechanisms to increase community engagement in combating poverty and helping poor and near poor families and individuals acquire assets and create and build wealth. So for me, I feel like that's where this community supports, you know, that identifying incentives and mechanisms. So that's I think those are the kind of two chunks of work that we can look at in this last hour. Yep.
Have we done any outreach to state, you know, Department of Human Services or others to ask them to help identify programs that they know of that are in existence that might already be receiving state funding?
Yeah. Well, I know Office on Economic Opportunity is participating in all the work groups.
Okay.
And they just couldn't be at this one today. They're going to be at the other two work groups this week. So that's one door into DHS, but of course that's just one. I mean, we could really look at other programs at DHS and reach out to other key people. I know there's DHS folks involved in some of the other work groups as well. The other work groups are a little bit more tangible. So the asset development work group is really looking at the asset development programs like the IDA programs, but also right now they're starting out looking at asset limits for public programs, and so DHS is going to have a place there. Though I'm not sure, and then the second one is the financial education work group, and I'm not sure how DHS is engaged in that one or not. I just know OEO is going to be there. So,
but even if they aren't participating on the task force, certainly if one of the members, you know, Representative Lanning or someone else were to request that they provide a list of, you know, programs that they fund or programs that they know of that fit this particular criteria, they could certainly do that and add to the inventory list that we're trying to pull together.
When you say tangible, what actually are you referring to? You said that the other focus group is more tangible.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you're talking about the development of assets. So how are you framing that? How are you measuring what tangible is?
Well, in a really simple term, I think that they can a little bit more easily identify what they need to do to get done. And I think the community supports model, what I'm listening and hearing is we're sort of trying to develop that criteria right now of what is a community engagement program that we want to bring forward. And so I feel like we're sort of in that. That's just my opinion, though. But I welcome.
I would agree. I mean, I think that there's a lot. There's curricula. There's a lot of, you know, the individual development programs have a real stir. And I think we're just starting to gather that now as a network, you know, how to define what our community, what is a functional community supports initiative look like? Yeah.
I don't know if that helps at all.
Well, it
that's
does.
Mine.
You
Thanks
know,
for coming.
I've read through the report a number of times and come to terms with the development of assets. And just looking at, if we're looking at the strengths of community support,
mm-hmm.
bringing in community partners, well, an asset focal point could be social assets. So, that's the tangible aspect of what we do. And the correlation point between the Search Institute's work, the Circle's work. And so that could be a good foundation
mm-hmm.
in determining what our tangible outcomes will be, because the activities seem to line up with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just like to propose that
mm-hmm.
as a focal point so we can really get down to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, and it's interesting because there are some approaches like community asset mapping.
Correct.
That might be really useful approaches for us to be getting a little bit more fluent around. You know, our work with it is through ABCD, which is a group out of Chicago. But, you know, there are a lot of different ways to map the community assets. And those software programs and those trainings are not terribly expensive, but they they cost. You have to, a community has to invest in the model, and they have to invest in the model over time, because it's, the information is only as good as it's, the phone number hasn't changed, and the, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, there are some approaches like asset mapping that maybe we should be talking mm-hmm. about as well.
And there is good research out there. Just a little research I've done already, the Kennedy School of Government has a social capital building yeah. toolkit on its website. And that's something that...
National League of Cities.
Yeah. I mean,
there's
some
really
start to gather
yeah.
some good. And this even has... It was great because it uses a lot of the language we use in circles with reciprocity and bridging. You know, it's got some great definitions. So this might be... That's a good point you make, X, about gathering the research, gathering, you know, definitional pieces that could help us put some architecture
right.
around what we're talking about
perfect.
Here. Yeah. So, and I could be, I don't know, Amy, if you're wanting to receive the research, or if I should be the person, if people are conducting this on your own, looking around, seeing, like you said, the League of Cities, and I could keep it in a one file sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that you can, if you're willing to
sure,
be that point person,
that. Yeah.
And then, you know, in the end, we'll be collecting all of the inventories from each work group so that we have a much larger directory. It may help to just, so that you know that each group is doing this. They're doing
yep.
this inventory, you know, slightly differently. The financial literacy group, because they've had a lot of people looking at it, they have sort of a two-level thing going on, and I'll just, which already existed, so don't feel pressure or behind or whatever, but they, to kind of map out their resources, did this flow chart, a more thematic flow chart about, and I'll pass it around, about financial literacy, federal, state, and local. And then behind it, they've backed it up. They've begun their glossary as well. So take a look at that. But they also, I mean, there's a plethora, as you all know, of financial literacy programs and activities out there. So for them, the glossary piece could be a kind of endless task. But they're, you know, they're taking a stab at it because they need to anyway. So those are, and then the asset development group is using the same kind of two-pronged system as we are for their glossary or inventory, both looking at programs and then looking at studies and evaluations. So one of the ideas was that a critical piece of understanding this element of work about ending poverty is really understanding, having a clear understanding of what is out there. And I think one of the things we found at the Poverty Commission is that there were a number of entities, programs, activities that were addressing it, but maybe weren't aware of each other, working together as well. So that was part of the impetus for this, is trying to find a place and a way to get those ideas connected and communicating with each other. That's why we're doing all this mapping and inventory stuff.
So I like the way you set this up, too, with the piece that has the circle on it. You know, collecting the inventory, and if folks are would like to just send me what you have in terms of, you know, resources, you know, descriptions,
yep.
Research. I should give everyone my email. Very
it's
easy.
On the,
it's oh, is
on
it
the
on there?
Sheet with the
oh,
circle.
Is on there?
Pam Johnson at mincap.org.
Yay!
So
thank
if you,
you
look at the circle sheet, they're two sided, and this oh. is an it's this is just the printout of the Excel spreadsheet that I sent out yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically just, the circle sheet is about the studies, and it's a real simple summary of what the study is and how we can get to it, and then which one of us submitted the idea. The triangle sheet, same idea exactly. Instead of studies, it's the programs, like the programs that we were just talking about in inventorying. So they're both two-sided, and again, they're just a printout of the Excel spreadsheet that I sent out yesterday. So if you're willing to start
there
being the, and then we'll, as we are with the mailing list, Pam, we'll just continue to keep each other updated on what's on these lists.
Amy, what's I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rebecca.
I was just going to say, Xavier, you raised an important point here, I think, in distinguishing what our group is about versus the asset group. I see the community supports this initiative is all about social assets, developmental assets, the intangible assets oftentimes, the relationships that Circles of Support has, those kind of assets of social relationships. The other group is more focused on the financial side of it. How can we help people build their financial assets? So that's where it's more tangible. They can zero in on things a little easier than we can, I think, in when we're dealing with the social asset development, personal developmental assets.
And I do think too that there's some data out there, and there's information talking more and more about how investment in these social assets is a positive financial return for
right.
communities.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think linking that to the conversation will be useful as we move
yeah.
forward.
There's a relation, clearly an important relationship, but I think it's helpful to distinguish what we're
Absolutely.
More focused on here.
Mm-hmm. And really, we're preparing for our next full group task force meeting, which is November 18th, so about a month away. The full group with all three task work groups are going to meet right here again from 1 to 5. And maybe we can spend the rest of our time just thinking about what do we as a group want to report back to that group. And perhaps it could be some brief presentations about what we just talked about today, you know, some of the models that the Circles, the Search Institute, some of the others. I'm just throwing that out there, but maybe we could do a little brainstorming of how folks, and that, so that will be the full, how many members are on again, the task force?
Eight.
Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I should say 10.
With the AG and
yeah,
Commerce.
The Attorney General and Commerce. So there's 10 total.
So 7 other senators and representatives in addition to Representative
right.
Lanning, plus appointees from the AG's office. And they'll be reporting too. The assets group, the financial assets, and the financial education groups will be meeting just like we are and reporting. So, thoughts on, you know, how folks would want to, you know, maybe present kind of a little overview of each of the models that we've talked about today?
Most of Search Institute's going to be in Houston, Texas for our national
conference.
So.
Okay.
I'm sitting here thinking about, I wonder if I can find a community volunteer from St. Louis Park that might come in and talk about what the model looks like in a community. I'll try to figure out who that would be.
Okay.
How we get
someone. So you'll get someone and Circles, obviously, we have lots of folks that could speak, that could pull some things together, and I don't know if you want to think out loud right now or if you want to have a conversation.
And the goal?
Would be to educate the other members about what Circles of Support is, how it functions, how it contributes to building social capital and social assets,
mm-hmm.
Why
Connecting
it matters.
What we're doing with
the larger, and by that time, within a month, we'll have had the time to pull together some of these, in addition to the white paper that Circles of Support has, and I know Search has a lot of stuff too, and some of the other groups. We pulled together a nice packet to hand to the first two.
One thing if I could just mention, because it's specific to that time frame on November 18th, annually, Xavier and I host an immersion training for agencies, communities interested in learning more about how to build a Circles of Support community. And it happens to be that week. However, what we're seeing, the reality right now is conference attendance, training type things is considerably down. I travel to different places in the state to present Circles, to advertise our training, and the last couple of conferences, the registration has been like under 50. Even there's one in the down here this week that we canceled out of because there's so few registrants. And we're seeing the same thing with our immersion training, is that people are interested, they want to do it, but they just don't have the dollars to send staff to go to these things. Mm-hmm. So that's the date we've chosen, but it's kind of on hold right now as to whether or not people will be able to attend.
And I think that's an
identifiable problem, though, that there isn't funding for those agencies to get more training or individuals to get more training.
Yes, and to tag on to that a little bit with what Xavier had said about it looking different, CIRCLES does vary by community, and a piece of the training is to identify the resources that you have. I think as service people, we can also get into that mindset, whereas if we don't get the dollars from this source or this source, therefore we cannot proceed. And we do need dollars to keep staff in place to lead some of these initiatives, but each community has something to contribute. One of the things that we do in Grand Rapids is utilize the dead oak trees as a way for people to earn credit in circles of support to pay their heating bills. So they're using sweat equity to earn these dollars. So what those resources are is going to vary by community, but also to train ourselves to look at how can we utilize what's there in as a way to generate revenue. Versus only looking at the next place I may be able to obtain a grant from. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we need both.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But oftentimes there's more that we're not seeing that might be right in our communities that we can use.
That might be a really good scenario to share, but for the group just to talk about, you know, we're not just looking for state dollars and other things, but we're actually looking at generating funds right in our own community. And here's an example.
That's a great idea. I mean, I think just being able to frame it the way that using the social assets and social capital is sort of, you know, that's how we fit into the larger task force. And then talking about circles and how using that exact example really will help kind of tie it up to the larger purpose of the task force as well. So I think that would be really a really positive.
So is it sounding like that week, will somebody be able to be here? Or with the training, the immersion training, will that be tricky for us?
We said the 19th.
November 18th. It's a Thursday.
It's a Thursday.
Be right here in this room.
It's a Thursday from what time?
1 p.m. to 5 p.m.
We have aside from the training, we have a quarterly presentation called Solutions to End Poverty that we have planned that day. Actually, we're going to invite Ms. Lang to the presentation. So what does that have to do with what I'm saying?
Just letting us know it's on the calendar.
So what I'm saying is it's
calendar.
A busy day. That's what I'm saying. And is this date nailed down?
Yeah.
The 18th is, yes.
Okay. So then we can make arrangements to have someone here, even if it wasn't me, to do the presentation. And around what time are we planning on?
It's from 1 to 5.
It is from 1 to 5, and we have to, Senator Jungbauer and Representative Lanning and I should meet to nail down the agenda, but you wouldn't have to be here the whole time.
Right.
No. Or a representative.
Someone could, and obviously
I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Right. I'm wondering, Amy, if each of the three shouldn't be scheduled for an hour of presentation discussion, and then that would give us 1 hour for overall or general, just as an idea.
That's a good idea. That's a good way to do
it. So that we could schedule it, you know, to help you with your scheduling or whatever.
That would be fine. And either way it goes, we'll work around, you know, being able to be here on that day.
We can gather our circles folks together either by a conference call or that sort of thing to kind of work out who was able to come and, you know, what we want to talk about.
I think the meeting on the 18th for the full task force is kind of a progress report of what we've talked about, what we've identified, discussed, giving the other task force members some background information.
And it's really, yeah, it's...
We're not trying to wrap this whole thing up.
I think one of the things is that we probably might not be able to meet during session. So it's also sort of a roadmap of how are we going to do this mapping, kind of what are we looking at, what is our group, what are some of the themes we're landing on, and just a taste, you know, kind of a taste of where each group is going. It's a very much a beginning thing. You asked a little bit about timing. The final report is, I mean, we have 2 years, so we've got, we've got time to do this.
Then what will happen during session? Will this task force meet during session, or
we can decide how we want to meet, often and wherever, and we can meet by conference call or by in person and move around. So.
I know we've got this 2-year time frame. Speaking for myself, I'm hoping that members of the task force will get some ideas now before session. Mm-hmm. Of some legislation that we may want to try and advance and work on. And I mean, that's the whole goal here of this whole task force, is to identify legislative initiatives that we can move forward with. And so even though our final report isn't going to be done for a couple of years, I'm hoping, I don't want to see us wait.
No, that's right. And I think that's a really good point to remember. I know that there is... some of the asset development group for sure has some legislation that they are considering and they're going to be talking about for this session as well. The final report, the actual due date is at the end of the biennium.
Right.
But that doesn't, I mean, I think you're right. We've talked a lot about how we definitely want to move some legislation and have a legislative package starting this session if possible, but for sure for the second year of the biennium.
Right.
So that's a good thing to keep raising.
Could you say, especially this session, you know, with the $6 billion budget deficit and that sort of looming there, should we look at more like language changes or technical changes versus raising funds this session, or should we even think about...
Well, I don't think we should avoid
the
funding because this session will be about budget, and if we want to have any chance of any funding at all in the next 2 years, we've got to start the process now. And obviously, programs that cost millions and millions of dollars, you might just as well not come forward and try it, but. I mean, there are a lot of things we can do that aren't big-ticket items. And maybe some of the things that we fund now, what we're talking about here is maybe a higher priority, that maybe some reallocation of resources is the way to go.
So I'm just looking at the sort of logistic things that we have to make sure that we do, and we have to... we want to identify someone from the group who will report out to the task force. And then in addition to if we want to invite any other guests or experts in that we want to have talk to us. I want to tell you all that we are going to list the names and the organizations of the work group members on the website. That's similar. Healthcare Access Commission does that. I had a couple calls from people who wanted to know who are on the group, so we're just going to do that. And then if we feel we need to meet again before the 18th or do a conference call or whatever, we want to just make sure we identify that.
And so the way I was hearing you talk, the two of you talk, maybe thinking about an hour of a presentation that this group could provide on the 18th.
Right.
And if we've got Search Institute, Circles of Support, there's other initiatives, Northern Connections, I could reach out and invite Deb, I'm forgetting her last name.
Carpenter.
Deb Carpenter, or somebody from Northern Connections. And some of the other initiatives, I don't know if you want to talk about the new child.
I don't know. Our planning session's actually the day after that.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if I'll be in that place. But if there's anything I can send ahead, I'll send it on to you.
Yep. And I can reach out to LSS, too, and see if there was something that they wanted to present. Mm-hmm. And and then obviously we can, in terms of paper to hand them, once you all start sending me your research and that sort of thing, I can compile that and have that ready as well.
I'm primarily looking for data or some best practices out there,
yeah,
or the things
like
that line up with the development of assets.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Social capital, yeah.
Very good.
We'll probably have more than we can possibly talk about.
I would say, too, my thought is that to not load up our hour with too many speakers,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
we're going to have, each group is going to have, I mean, I'm thinking maybe two. And then the other thing is that questions and answers and discussion always
mm-hmm.
are such a fruitful and important part of it and take long. Take a while. So to keep that in mind, too, I don't know. Representative Lanning, what you think about that, but I'm just...
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be good to have a half a dozen speakers
no.
or whatever. I think we should be selective about
yep.
that.
And
clearly, we've got some good
right.
prospects right here. So.
And keeping in mind that there'll be other opportunities to get folks in presenting as the task force continues to meet, too.
I think that logistically on the 18th, I would likely have someone represent me at that training so that I could be here.
So you could be here?
That would be
so
fabulous.
That's
yeah.
hmm.
wonderful. Okay. So
and
we know.
And I have a question, and that would be I'm thinking about someone who's a leader for the Northfield Initiative perhaps being able to be here for that meeting. Is not finding somebody from search per se, but somebody who's actually doing the work with that.
Sure.
Sure.
Okay.
Whatever you think. You know,
and is that for the Alliance Initiative?
No, but
that?
Actually Zach Dewitt, who's the chair of the Healthy Community Work in Northfield,
okay.
also knows all about the Alliance.
Okay.
So we could make him
so
wear
he
two
could.
Hats if
he,
we
okay.
ask.
That would be okay.
Great.
That's good.
Okay.
That's
right.
good.
I'll
yeah.
see if Zach is available.
That's good.
And maybe preparing. Like
yeah.
you said, leaving lots of time for discussion, maybe a 10 or 15-minute presentation of search, 10 or 15 on circles. I can talk to Deb Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
Can come, so that's a good, you know.
There's a new director there, by the way.
Oh, there is.
I don't have
that
name and card. Maybe.
But even with those three models and presenting the research that you all will be gathering, that's a good. That'll take up our hour pretty quickly. So... does that sound kind of like a good template?
Sure.
For and then do we want to meet again physically, or do folks feel comfortable communicating via email or conference call? I know everyone's really, really busy, and you're coming from corners of the state. I don't want to expect it.
This is going to sound kind of nerdy, but I'm actually looking forward to reading more like white papers and some of the other how do people come at this issue of social capital
mm-hmm.
and So I'm kind of looking forward to some kind of gathering of some of this, you know.
What I can just keep doing is sharing when folks send to me. I can collect it and then once I've got a body of it, send it out.
I'm wondering if it would make sense, though, to do some sort of a check-in phone conference before the 18th.
Not a bad idea.
You know, just to reiterate what our agenda is, if anybody's, like, something's really struck them that they...
Could we each be doing some homework on trying to expand on our discussion here and then share that with each other either through Amy or by getting it to Amy. Amy can then circulate it to the rest of
mm-hmm.
us so
yep.
we don't all have to set up a listserv to do it.
Yeah, what I could do too is I could just on our resource page on the website, I could have a community supports work group, and I could just have the resources in one spot. So you could just click there, and so
does everybody have
between Pam right? and I, we can gather those resources, and then I can just post them as they come in. So in terms of homework, one piece would be reading through the resources,
right.
I think, to kind of familiarize ourselves with that, and I can set that up. Probably not until next week. But.
And if each of us in the process here as we go forward has thought of something that would help this discussion, this process, to let the rest of us know that.
Keep the dialogue going. So we'll have an email list. Amy, we can just use the one that you created.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
And I'll add, if there's names on here today that weren't on there, I'll make sure I add them. I also, each of the work groups has a worksheet kind of to fill out, describing what happened in their work group, and as a way to take minutes, and I'll fill all ours out and make sure that you can all take a look at it to make sure I've captured it right. I think the one thing that I'm starting to capture is sort of the features of these groups, of these social asset, social capital groups that we were starting to talk about, the kind of the width, the community engagement, a holistic approach, an intentional approach, longer-term programming. So I'm sort of as listening and taking, and we can start, you know, kind of defining what makes these programs too. So I'll put this and what we've talked about in something, and then you can react to that, and that can be part of the conference call too.
I think that'll help us determine the themes.
Yep.
I think they're connection points to what we're all doing. And so seeing that all gathered in one place might be helpful.
Yeah. So thinking about a conference call, the 18th is a Thursday. How far out are we thinking? What kind of time do people want to digest and think and... I'm thinking a couple of weeks or the week just prior to that, the week of the 8th, or
for sure after the election.
Yes. The second world. Later in that week of the 2nd? Throw out some time.
What I was imagining was like that Monday before the 18th.
Before the
18th. I was thinking of it not as like we're, because we've already kind of developed what our hour is going to be, but just a check-in for us that this is still where everybody's at, and there'll be that communication up until that point. But
you're saying
15? The
15th? Is that Monday?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Sure. I'm not going to be in town that day.
It doesn't have to be that.
But you can definitely manage that without me.
You don't have a phone.
Well, I do, but I'm going to be at a meeting that's a one-time, one-day meeting.
Yeah.
Great. It's hard for me to get out of it.
Is that okay? I'm not.
That would work for me.
No. I know. Yep. No, but I went to that date.
I think that's a good.
You know, how does the November 11th, Thursday, November 11th work for people?
That's fine.
Is that Veterans Day?
Veterans Day.
Oh.
But I
don't have that one up.
I'm glad to work on Veterans Day because I'm the only one with
it. Does that get too soon, November 10th? Is that too, or does that give us enough? Is that good?
Great.
In the afternoon? Would November 10th, a Wednesday the 10th? Like an early afternoon, and I can facilitate the conference call.
What is early afternoon?
How would like a 1:30 work for people?
It wouldn't work for me.
What works for you?
It would be late afternoon.
Okay.
It would be like 2:30.
Would a 3:00 work for everybody?
Sure.
Let's do 3:00. Perfect.
On the 10th?
Yep. And I will send out the call-in number for everybody. We use the agency, so. Well, this is great. I feel like we've got a lot accomplished, and we've got a great group, and I'm excited to get rolling.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, thank you so much, and thanks for sticking around after your session yesterday to keep us going.
Thanks to all of you.
And thank you all for coming from distances, too.
Yes, you guys.
Yeah, thank really you. Appreciate that.
It was well worth the trip. I do have one more question.
Yes.
In regards to legislative priorities,
yeah.
Is there anything that correlates, that's occurring now, that I don't know how to answer, ask the question that I'm thinking about. Are there legislative priorities that could be redirected towards the work that we're doing within our communities? Are there, I guess that would be the question.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question, and there needs to be. this whole budget process that we're going to be going through right now, we're going to have to reevaluate the priorities and maybe to support some of the things we're talking about here, other things that aren't of as high a priority need to have their funding changed, where we're directing it to those things that are going to make more of a difference in the lives of people. I mean, we want to make a difference in people's lives, and if there's a better way to spend those resources, those limited resources, we need to find that. So that's what we're really going to be about here in the next this next year, particularly. And I have to do a lot of that.
Stands out that has been a concern around in a time of limited resources,
yeah,
where there are a number of expenditures and a number of priorities that are priorities now, but are questionable.
To be sure, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So doing a little bit of research on that might be a good thing prior this presentation next.
Yeah.
Just to kind of.
Well, if people have ideas as to maybe how, where some resources ought to be reallocated. I mean, we're going to be looking for that.
I think what's hard is that, you know, this is often seen as kind of soft work, or, you know, it's harder to count it or, you know, measure it or whatever. So it's really making that case for the reality that it changes lives, that it's impactful.
I believe that's the work we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
This
yes.
work is hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, and there are tangible components within this work that we're doing that we have not verbalized.
Mm-hmm.
And I think,
yeah,
you know, with a little bit of effort, we can make that case.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm asking the question. I'm an organizer, too, so I got to see kind of the end of the road and determine what I'm aiming at, and then at that point kind of work backwards, so coming to terms of where we're going to support.
I mean, and I think, too, like to think as creatively as possible and outside of the Health and Human Services kind of box.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why I think this task force got a lot of hearings and made it through, is because we were going through different committees, and I think that's really helpful right now to think about those. What are some other mechanisms if we're looking at reallocation and budgeting? Where else can it come from besides the expansive budget?
Well, and I think, I know that the legislators have helped us, Search Institute, get funding from foundations. I mean, it doesn't all come from legislation.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from people getting educated about what works. So.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Good to see you again. Are you heading right back up to Moorhead?
Or
you got more
business to do?
Yeah, I'm sure you try to pack it in, don't you?
Yeah,
I
try to do as much piggybacking as you can.
Yeah, good.